It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Because there had been some abusive practices and some practices that were really unfair to consumers, Congress came up with law. It's called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And it sets out basically the rules that debt collectors in most instances are to follow when dealing with collecting a debt. There are things that can be done legally and there are things that can't be done legally. And this was an attempt by Congress to put a stop to some of the abusive tactics that some debt collectors were using.
Private attorney Dan Rosenthal talks about how to handle debt collectors, their rights and duties under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, and what to do and not to do when the debt collector calls. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how Virginia's tax system is frozen in time and cannot generate sufficient revenue to keep Virginia moving forward. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 177, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Virginia's taxes were designed for yesterday's economy, and the system is not capable of generating sufficient revenues today to keep Virginia moving forward, according to a new report released last month by the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis. The report, frozen in time, shows that Virginia has grappled with budget shortfalls in 10 of the last 12 years, and while reliance on deep cuts, one-time budget balancing tools, and gimmicks got the state through the worst of the recession, structural problems still exist and will resurface. According to the report, when it comes to raising revenue to fund the core functions of our public structures, Virginia is frozen in time. Most of Virginia's tax code dates back to the early 1900s, when a car cost less than $900 and a dozen eggs were only 23 cents. Although we've changed the way we earn money and buy stuff, and the way we structure and operate businesses, our revenue system hasn't kept up with those changes. The report points to specific ways in which the largest sources of general fund revenue, the individual income tax, the corporate income tax, and the sales and use tax, are insufficient because they are outdated, narrow, and inadequate in Virginia's modern economy. Virginia's basic income tax structure has not been touched since 1987, a quarter of a century ago. Since then, however, the income distribution has shifted, with income growth heavily concentrated among higher-income households. Key changes in business models and practices, as well as the creation of numerous special tax breaks, have outstripped the ability of the corporate tax to adequately account for today's business activity. Over 60% of Virginia corporations paid no corporate tax in 2008. Sales tax revenue as a share of total general fund revenue has fallen steadily since 1977, largely driven by changes in what Virginians are buying and how they are buying it. For example, consumer spending has shifted from buying goods to buying services. Between 1980 and 2010, the rate of spending on services increased almost 23%. Yet, of 168 services identified by the Federation of American Tax Administrators as being taxed by some states, Virginia taxes only 18. In addition, the rise of internet shopping means that less and less of what people buy is even subject to taxation under current law in Virginia. The full report is available at www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegebright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is summons to answer debtor interrogatories. A summons to answer debtor interrogatories is a court document that requires you to come to a court hearing at a certain date, time, and place. The hearing allows a creditor who has a judgment against you to ask you questions under oath about your income, employment, bank accounts, and things you own. These questions are called interrogatories. If you don't appear and answer, you can be arrested or jailed. The arrest or jailing is because you failed to follow the court's order, not because you failed to pay the judgment. A judgment creditor can summons you to court to answer debtor interrogatories only once every 6 months. Of course, each creditor can call you in once every 6 months. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and summons to answer debtor interrogatories is this week's legal term of the week.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here in Henrico County. We're speaking with private attorney Dan Rosenthal, whose practice includes a substantial amount of debt collection. And we are going to be talking today about the topic of how to handle your debt collectors. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks, Marty. Good to be here.
Dan, would you start by telling our listeners, in general terms, what are the rights and also the duties of debt collectors under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act?
Well, I'd be happy to. Let's preface the discussion by saying that there are good debt collectors and there are not so good debt collectors. There's bad apples in every walk of life, and debt collection is no different. But because there had been some abusive practices and some practices that were really unfair to consumers, Congress came up with law. It's called the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. And it sets out basically the rules that debt collectors in most instances are to follow when dealing with collecting a debt. There are things that can be done legally, and there are things that can't be done legally. And this was an attempt by Congress to put a stop to some of the abusive tactics that some debt collectors were using.
And to whom does the law apply? Clearly, it applies to debt collectors. What is the definition of a debt collector?
Well, a debt collector is a third party who is collecting a debt for someone else in the consumer setting. So this would not involve a contractor who owed a supplier money or vice versa. It would not involve a dispute between realtors over a business transaction. It involves consumer debt, and that's basically household items, the items you buy at the big box hardware stores. It involves loans that you get from your bank. It involves medical bills. It involves things that are consumer-related. The Fair Debt Collection Practices Act only applies to those who are collecting debts for others. And this is sometimes a fine distinction, and consumers often have a difficult time determining whether or not it's a third party collecting. So, for instance, an in-house debt collection person is not covered by the Act because that is the same as the creditor collecting the debt. However, once they turn that account over to an attorney or an independent debt collection agency, then the Act clicks in and all the provisions apply.
And is the Act going to apply to all attorneys who are collecting third-party debts, as you describe, or does it only apply to some attorneys?
Well, I don't know of any exemptions to the Act for attorneys who are doing third-party collection debts. There was some question when the Act was first enacted as to whether or not it applied to attorneys, and the subsequent case law determined that, yes, indeed, attorneys are covered by the Debt Collection Act.
Okay, so let's assume that the Act applies because the debt is being collected by a third-party collector. What are the rights of the debt collector or debt collection attorney, and what are the duties?
Well, we mentioned that it has to be a consumer debt, personal debt, family, household debt, credit card debt, and those types of things. It can't be a business-to-business debt. The debt collector can't contact you at all hours of the day and night. That used to be a harassment technique used by some unscrupulous debt collectors to call people in the middle of the night, at midnight, and it was a real mess. Typically, between the hours of 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. are the hours that are acceptable, unless the consumer notifies the debt collector not to contact them at all, in which case the debt collector needs to do exactly that, stop contacting them. The debt collector under the Act can't contact anyone else about the debt other than to possibly get an address for the debtor, but they can't contact your neighbors and say, hey, I'm calling you about Joe who owes us some money. Where does he bank? That's prohibited under the Act. The debt collector has to give you certain information about the debt if you don't remember. And this comes up frequently where an old credit card debt that consumer may have thought was long written off may have been sold to a debt consolidator for pennies on the dollar, and the debt consolidator wants to make some money for those pennies on the dollar, and they contact the consumer in an attempt to get the credit card paid off. The debt collector is obligated to validate the debt if it's requested by the debtor in writing, and that's very important. The request by the debtor must be in writing to the debt collector in order to invoke some of these rights that they have under the Act.
So let's assume that a debt collector or debt collection attorney calls a consumer, and they're doing so between the hours of 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. What information do they have to provide in that first phone call in terms of who they are and what the debt is all about? What are they supposed to tell the consumer who's on the other end of the phone?
Well, first of all, need to identify themselves fully and truthfully. They can't claim they're from a governmental agency. They can't use a false company name. They can't send you anything in the mail that looks like an official document when in fact it's simply a debt collection letter. The debt collectors are prohibited from indicating that you might be arrested if you don't pay your debt, unless that's actually a possibility. They can't seize your property or sell your property unless there's a provision in the law to seize and collect property, and we can talk about that. And they can't threaten to take legal action against you if they don't intend to do that. Some debts are so small that it's not worth it to go to court, and some debt collectors never have any intention of going to court. If they don't have any intention of going to court, they can't say, if you don't pay this, we're gonna file a lawsuit against you tomorrow, if they don't intend to do that. Your question was, though, what can the consumer do and what are the consumer's obligations? And the consumer's obligations are really whatever their conscience decides. They shouldn't give false information, but by the same token, they're not obligated really to give any information if they are concerned about having the debt come off their credit record, or if they want to avoid having a judgment taken, if that's likely to happen, they may want to talk to the debt collector briefly about what their options are to pay it off or not pay it off.
And let's assume that the debt collector is following the law and is giving that information about who they are and being truthful and telling the consumer, this is what you owe, this is to whom you owe it, this is how much, we want to work with you. And let's assume that the consumer is, in fact, interested in doing that for any number of the reasons that you mentioned, that it will possibly remove this debt from their credit report, or it'll prevent a lawsuit from happening. What do you recommend that consumers do in that situation? I know a lot of people think, well, if I just send them $5 a month, $10 a month, they can't sue me. And of course, I'd like you to dispel that myth. And having dispelled that myth, go ahead and say what you think the consumer ought to do in that situation.
Well, it's difficult to give any kind of blanket advice, any specific given debt. However, if someone has a $50,000 medical debt and they want to pay $5 a month on it, that is probably not a way to work off the debt. Those payments would be so insignificant, and if there's any interest attached to the debt, they wouldn't even be paying their interest on the debt. And they may want to explore other options. They may want to explore bankruptcy. They may want to ask the debt collector if they can come up with a lump sum. Would the creditor be willing to discount a $50,000 debt to maybe $5,000 or something that would be affordable? Maybe you could borrow the money to pay it off. Or if it appears that it's not even within the realm of paying it off, if it's too big, then it's time to explore other options, possibly bankruptcy. And maybe you have no choice but to take a judgment on that. You know, there's worse things than having a judgment sit on your records, although it does give a collector some options to try and collect that debt down the road.
Well, assuming that some type of arrangement can be made between the consumer and the debt collector, how do you suggest that that be memorialized? Do you suggest that that be put in writing, that you know these payments will be made on this schedule and that will prevent any further action? And if so, how is that actually done?
Well, I can't speak for other debt collectors, but it is always, you know, the old adage, and it even applies to attorneys and laymen alike, get it in writing. Get all the terms in writing. If I do this, you're going to do this. And that should not be any problem for any debt collector who is following the rules. They want to leave their file in as good an order as they can as well, and that memorializing what the agreement is. In my office, if a lawsuit has been filed against a debtor, and in the meantime, we work something out. We work out a payment plan that's acceptable to the client, and it's acceptable to the debtor. We will memorialize it in a promissory note. And once the promissory note is signed and notarized, we will dismiss the lawsuit. Then the promissory note becomes our piece of paper that memorializes the agreement. Now, if payments are to be made under the promissory note and they aren't made, we may end up back in court just as we started, but it's a way, and I would say in 75% of the cases, at least in my office, the promissory notes are upheld, payments are timely made, and once they're made, the note gets torn up.
And I know that some attorneys will, as part of that promissory note, attach what's called a confession of judgment. Would you tell our listeners what a confession of judgment is and whether that's something that should or should not be included in a promissory note?
Well, from the consumer's side, it should not be included. From the creditor's side, it absolutely should be included. A confession of judgment on a promissory note is a special type of promissory note. First of all, I mean, maybe we should explain what a promissory note is. A promissory note is really a side contract that says, in exchange for you not doing something, I agree to make payments every month, every 2 weeks, every week, whatever it is, over time to try and resolve the debt. A promissory note with a confession of judgment is a special type of promissory note that has the added provision that if I don't pay as I said I will under this promissory note, you, Mr. Creditor, have the right to take that note to court without giving me notice, without sending me a letter, without having the sheriff serve me any papers, and get a judgment against me for the remaining balance that exists on the note and any interest and attorney's fees that may be listed in the note. So it's a fairly powerful tool for the creditors. Speaking for the creditor's side, if the creditor has already been to court and had to dismiss a case once, it helps compensate them for having to do the work a second time. From the consumer standpoint, they have to be very careful that they fulfill the promises of the note, or they may find themselves having a judgment taken against them without their even knowing about it.
And that's certainly very fair and balanced advice. I'd like to shift gears now and ask you, what should consumers do if they are get a call from or are confronted by a debt collector or even a debt collection attorney who is not following the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, is doing any of the illegal or questionable things that you mentioned earlier in the interview?
There are growing body of attorneys who are more than willing to go after unscrupulous attorneys, as they well should. I'm not talking about the attorney who makes an inadvertent mistake in the collection of debts, but those who aren't willing to follow the rules, or not just an attorney, but any debt collector who doesn't follow the rules, and they are subject to a civil lawsuit in which there are substantial penalties under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. The Act provides for the party's actual damages, or up to $1,000 per violation, plus attorney's fees. And when you start adding in attorney's fees, and, you know, if they sent three letters incorrectly, that could be $3,000 right off the bat that it could be owed to you. You might want to seek out counsel to see if there has been a violation of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. There is a website, privacyrights.org, that deals with some of those issues on violations of the Act. And if you ask around, or the Virginia State Bar also has a service called Virginia Lawyer Referral Service. They are in the phone book, Virginia Lawyer Referral Service. It's run by the Virginia State Bar, and they can also direct you to an attorney who deals with Collection Act violations.
Well, that's very good. I appreciate the information. We have been speaking with private attorney Dan Rosenthal. He has a law office in Henrico County, and we have been speaking with how to handle your debt collectors, both the ones who are following the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and those who are not. Thank you so much for being on the show, Dan.
Thanks, Marty.
This week's top three tips are about a creditor's bill in equity. The first tip is that a creditor's bill in equity is a second and separate lawsuit filed in circuit court after a creditor gets a judgment against you. The lawsuit asks for an order to sell your real property, like your house or land, to pay a creditor who has a judgment against you. The second tip is that, as with the first lawsuit, the creditor must file the lawsuit, serve the court papers on you, and get an order. The third tip is that if there's a mortgage on your house or land and the court issues an order for the sale, the mortgage is paid first from the sale proceeds. Due to this, a creditor's bill in equity seldom is used. for the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips about a creditor's bill in equity.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegebright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Two things are certain, death and taxes, and the complexities of probating an estate make both seem equally complicated. Join us next week when private attorney George Shanks, Commissioner of Accounts for Page County, Virginia, and past president of the Virginia State Bar, removes the fear and mystery of probate and the administration of estates in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on December 8, 2010. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegebright.